Thank you, and thanks to each and every one of you for taking time from your busy schedules to be here with us at the White House today to brainstorm about how we can increase productivity and the resiliency of our government by making our workplaces more flexible. At the start of another transformational period in American business, Andy Grove of Intel said, "There are two kinds of businesses, those that use email and those that will." Today, flexibility is the new email. There are employers that have it, and there are those that will. As an HR practitioner, it is clear to me that helping our workers achieve their life and career goals together makes sense for all of us. When we allow a new mother or a father to work from home part-time, we retain their valuable skills and keep on getting a return on investment for the valuable training that we have made. We promise you that we will take today's exciting ideas back to our federal workplace. And judging by the buzz that has been in the rooms and at the work groups today, the CEOs and the labor leaders here will also take them back to their workplaces as well. With a little encouragement from the Corporate Voices Challenge that Valerie Jarrett mentioned in the opening session. Flexibility will work when we define the results that each worker and team is responsible for, and then hold them to account. We've already started in my agency, and I am very pleased to announce today that OPM has signed up two of the leaders in our flexibility field in the country, the creators of the Results Only Work Environment, or RO, Callie Ressler and Jody Thompson, who are both here today. I'd ask them to stand and be recognized. Callie and Jody started in the private sector with Best Buy, but then they wrote a book on why work sucks and how to fix it. Since then, they've branched out, bringing RO to other companies, the local government workplace, and beginning today, the federal workplace. Over the next 8 months, they are going to work with us to implement RO for 400 workers at the Office of Personnel Management, including my own staff. So I will be watching, as will our independent evaluator, Deloitte. If it's not working, we'll go back to the drawing board. But if it does work, and I believe it will become the cornerstone in our effort to make the federal government the model employer for the 21st century, as well as meet the president's challenge to make government cool again. Success will send a powerful message, because if flexibility can succeed in the federal government, with the unrivaled importance, complexity, and variety of our missions, as well as our red tape, quite frankly, it can succeed anywhere. Our next speaker knows something about telework and the culture we're trying to create. Connected wherever he goes, he's able to work from Ohio in the morning, Washington in the afternoon, and on the plane in between. He and his staff expect to be reachable anywhere, so work can go on wherever they are. And he still has time to watch his daughters play basketball. So now to speak a little more about the importance, especially in our challenging economic times, of harnessing the benefits of the flexibility revolution for both productivity and work-life balance. It is the highest honor and privilege of my life to introduce to you a man I like to call our teleworker in chief, a man I could not be prouder to have as my boss, the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Hello, hello. Hello. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Please, please, have a seat. First, one caveat, I will not be good as good as Michelle. So keep your expectations lower. I want to first of all acknowledge John Berry for the extraordinary work he's doing here and for helping to organize this. Thank you, John. In addition, we've got Secretary Hilda Solis is here from our Department of Labor. Dr. Christina Romer, who's the chair of our Council of Economic Advisors. Where are you, Christina? Right there. Valerie Jarrett, senior advisor and chair of the White House Council on Women and Girls. Ms. Melody Barnes, I actually just saw run off to the garden. She was on my list, the chair of our Domestic Policy Council, but she's not here. Karen Mills, who is the administrator for our Small Business Administration. And Ms. Martha Johnson, administrator of the General Services Administration. So I understand you've had a wonderful session. I heard all about it. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today and sharing your thoughts on what we can do as business leaders and advocates, as employees, and as government officials to modernize our workplaces to meet the needs of our workforce and our families. And all of us here today know just how wide that gap has grown. And we're all familiar with the economic and demographic changes that have brought us to this point. However, the past generation or two, as costs have risen and wages have lagged, many families have found they can no longer survive on just one income. And at the same time, we've broken down barriers and opened up opportunities. So more women have entered into the workforce, bringing home paychecks that are increasingly critical to supporting families. Today, two-thirds of American families with kids are headed by two working parents or a single working parent. And the result is the rise of what one expert I know refers to as the juggler family. And for these families, every day is a high wire act. Everything is scheduled right down to the minute. There's no room for error. If the car breaks down or somebody gets sick or there's a problem at school, that begins a cascading domino effect that leaves everybody scrambling. And I have to say that this is something that Michelle and I have struggled with in our own family. As she told you earlier today, it wasn't that long ago that both of us were working full-time outside the home while raising two young daughters. I was away for days on end for my job, and Michelle was working hard at hers. So a lot of times, we felt like we were just barely keeping everything together. When we were at work, we were worrying about what was happening at home. When we were at home, we were worrying about work. We both felt our overloaded schedules were taking a toll on our marriage. And we had it relatively easy. We could afford good health care. We had a wonderful mother-in-law, grandmother. who could help out? We had to ship her in, even in the White House. We both had jobs where we could rework our schedules in an emergency, without risking being fired, or having our paychecks docked. Now most folks just aren't that lucky, particularly in today's economy when many people aren't just working one job, but are having to work two or three to get by, or they're working longer hours, or they're out of a job and they can't afford to be choosy about things like flexibility and benefits. And this disconnect between the needs of our families and the demands of our workplace also reflects a broader problem, that today we as a society still see workplace flexibility policies as a special perk for women rather than a critical part of a workplace that can help all of us. There's still this perception out there that an employee who needs some time to tend to an aging parent or attend to a parent-teacher's conference isn't fully committed to his or her job, or that if you make a workplace more flexible, it necessarily will be less profitable. Now, it's true that women are still disproportionately affected by this issue, something Michelle always reminds me of, which is another reason why it's such great concern for me. But plenty of fathers out there wish they had more time to spend with their kids. Plenty of sons wish they could do more for their elderly parents. Plenty of workers, both women and men, wish they could go back to school so they can beef up their skills and advance their careers. And there are plenty of communities that desperately need the new jobs we can create when we embrace teleworking and mobile workplaces. And as for how this issue affects companies' bottom lines, a report by the White House Council of Economic Advisors that we're releasing today found that companies with flexible work arrangements can actually have lower turnover and absenteeism, and higher productivity, and healthier workers. So let's be clear. Workplace flexibility isn't just a women's issue. It's an issue that affects the well-being of our families and the success of our businesses. It affects the strength of our economy, whether we'll create the workplaces and jobs of the future we need to compete in today's global economy. And ultimately, it reflects our priorities as a society. Our belief that no matter what each of us does for a living, caring for our loved ones and raising the next generation is the single most important job that we have. I think it's time we started making that job a little easier for folks. Now, many of you here represent companies and workplaces that are already doing just that, embracing telecommuting, flex time, compressed work weeks, job sharing, flexible start and end times, and helping your employees generally find quality child care and elder care. And if you're doing this not just because it's the right thing to do, but because you found that what's good for your workers and is good for your families can be good for your bottom lines and your shareholders as well, then you need to spread the word. My administration is committed to supporting efforts like these. Our budget for next year includes competitive grants to help states launch their own paid leave programs. It increases funding for child care and nearly doubles the child care tax credit for millions of middle-class families. And it provides support for folks caring for aging relatives and for seniors who want to live independently for as long as possible. We're also committed to practicing what we preach and serving as a model for the policies that we're encouraging it. John's been all over this. That's the purpose of the pilot project that John just told you about. And that's why John is working with our Chief Technology Officer, Anish Chopra, to provide opportunities for federal employees here in Washington, but also all across America, to telework on a regular basis. Where regulations are in the way, we'll see what we can do to change them. Where new technology can help, we'll find a secure, cost-effective way to install it. Where training is needed to help managers and workers embrace this approach, we'll adopt the best practices from the private sector. Because in the end, we believe that all of this isn't just about providing a better work experience for our employees. It's about providing better, more efficient service for the American people, even in the face of snowstorms and other crises that keep folks from getting to the office. I do not want to see the government close because of snow again. It's about attracting and retaining top talent in the federal workforce and empowering them to do their jobs and judging their success by the results that they get, not by how many meetings they attend or how much face time they log or how many hours are spent on airplanes. It's about creating a culture where, as Martha Johnson puts it, work is what you do, not where you are. And in these efforts, we'll be looking to all of you for advice and ideas, and we plan to continue this conversation in the coming months, holding forums and roundtables in communities across the country so that we can seek out more good ideas and best practices that we can adopt and promote. So, again, I thank you for being part of this forum. I look forward to hearing about what you all came up with today, and I look forward to working with all of you in the years to come. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.